fighting for America.
The word is now that the Attorney General will resign today, and that he has served our country very, very well. The Attorney General will be submitting his resignation to the President.
Fighting for Idaho.
I don't know for sure who we're arming. I'm not sure that a year or 2 years from now, those weapons won't be turned on us. I'm very uncomfortable with what's going on there.
Fighting for you.
Good morning, Kevin. I just admire you to no end. You keep doing the right things. Having you out there and promoting the things that you promote is sure a blessing.
Boise's Mr. Right, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. Kevin Miller in the morning.
Stay on top and stay strong.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Boy, I just got an email from Mitt Romney. How about that? Phone number is 580-5436. 580-KIDO. Coming up, we will go back to the situation in Moore, Oklahoma. Your reaction to the president's speech last night, his interview on 60 Minutes. But now we're joined by best-selling author Douglas Brunt. Mr. Brunt, thank you for joining us here at 580-KIDO. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So let's talk a little bit about your new work here. Part Primary Colors, part House of Cards. The Means takes you into the Deep South, Durham, North Carolina. What's that about?
The book follows two men running for the White House and a female journalist who covers politics who gets onto a story that could bring down one or both of the candidates. And much of the story does take place in Durham, North Carolina, because one of the presidential contenders is a trial attorney who gets recruited to run for the governor's mansion in North Carolina, which he wins, and then ultimately makes a run for the White House. And so a lot of it is set down there where that candidate is coming up.
Now, did you spend a lot of time in Durham?
I went to Duke undergrad, and so I spent a number of years there and very familiar with the area in Chapel Hill, where in this novel the character is went to Chapel Hill undergrad and Carolina Law School as well.
Now, if you're from the Triangle or whatever, it really resonates. Was there any thought in just picking that location in your book, considering you could have picked any place else in the country?
In I have two novels out now, and in both cases, I've always picked places where I've spent a lot of time, and it helps set a scene that's credible and real, and you know I can kind of take a person there. The other piece of North Carolina is it just has such an interesting political history, and it fit what I wanted to do there. It's kind of a purplish state, but it's kind of had periods of being both red and blue. So it was just a good spot to pick for this candidate to come up. I think North Carolina's got interesting history, and I know it well. So
crazy stuff going on. I used to work in North Carolina, so I'm familiar with your part of the world. How does one come up with the concept for a bestseller that, again, you're talking part Primary Colors, part House of Cards? How does that work in your mind?
I've had a lot of – my wife is a journalist, and she covers a lot of politics. And so it's a subject that is often discussed here. And as a writer, I naturally observe and make connections between observations and storylines and ideas, and just had an idea for this book. And it's just started coming together. So I weaved in a lot of journalism as well and explored those points of intersection between politics and journalism, which is an interesting relationship. I did a lot of research for this book, so I had access to some people who've run national campaigns, who've worked in the White House, who've been part of the media but embedded with the campaigns, traveling with them in all the hotels and the flights, and it's really fascinating stuff when you get behind the scenes. And in both of my books, I picked subjects where there's a public perception of what's happening that, you know, that we all see, but it's a very produced package. And what I try to do with the books is get behind the scenes so that you can see what's really going on. So when that candidate steps out to the podium, he's really prepared. But what's really interesting is to know who's standing backstage and with that whole team of people and all the crazy things that went on to deliver up that scene that we all get to see.
Douglas Brunt with us, 580KIDO, his new book, The Means. By the way, speaking of Mrs. Brunt, do you ever get in the last word with her?
With my wife? she's occasionally, I guess. You know, the funny thing is, she's the way she is on air is similar to how she is all the time. You know, she's very funny, very smart, very quick, and she's very kind. So we make a good team. You know, we're raising three little kids now, and I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else.
Well, she talks about you on the air a lot, and I don't really want to make it about her, but for our listeners that really don't know who your wife is, could you let us know that here?
My wife is Megyn Kelly, who is an anchor for Fox News.
Right, exactly. And how do you deal with her popularity? I mean, you're a best-selling author, and, you know, she's, you know, pushing everybody both politically and socially and ratings-wise.
It opens up more doors than – there's more good than bad, really, at least in her case. I think that celebrity for some people can be trying. She handles it so well and so gracefully, and it always leads to fun stuff. You know, she did, you know, some of these late night shows. She did the Leno show just before Leno signed off. And so we made a little trip out to LA of it and got to go backstage at Leno and meet some nice folks. And so little things like that come up from time to time that are actually pretty fun. And, you know, everyone, the people who watch her show and like her are all so nice and they'll come say hi, but everyone's really very nice about it. And they don't try to monopolize their time. Everyone sort of says a nice hello and love your show, and she always has time for everybody. So we have a quick, nice conversation, and it's really very nice.
Mr. Brunt, what do you and your wife disagree on the Duke lacrosse case? I remember working Carolina, and I remember about your wife being in the field. She was a hard worker at the time down there in Carolina, and you as a mm-hmm. Duke grad. I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
That's actually around the time when we first met, and she was out in front of everybody on that story, yeah, getting it right, because she was doing thorough journalism and said, let's not leap to conclusions here. Let's really find out what's going on. And when the first inkling started coming around that there may be more to the story, she was one of the early people to report it. And I think that the kids who were involved in that case and certainly their parents really appreciated her integrity with reporting the story and not leaping to some sensational headline, but being a little bit more a little bit more thorough about it.
Yeah, that was tough to do. Even the attorney for, I think it was Reed Seligman, Colin Finnerty, or David Evans said they initially believed the hype. Let's get back to you and the Means. What did you learn based on your high contacts that people that have run White House campaigns, presidential campaigns, that you'll talk about in this book about the making of the candidate, the imaging, the packaging?
One thing I learned that was a positive thing is that the people who are in the business of politics, the people who are running these campaigns or at senior positions on staffs of candidates, is that they seem less partisan than the rest of the country. And they recognize in each other across party lines that they've chosen this business, and this is how they pay the mortgage and pay their kids' tuition. And whether they're left or right, they seem to have a healthy respect for each other. And so I met with a number of folks who have been very senior in running these campaigns, from Joe Trippi, and I know Bob Beckel a bit. And I'm sure if you asked Bob Beckel what he thinks of Ed Rollins, he'd say, I respect him. And I think Ed Rollins would say the same of Bob Beckel. The candidates, I think that's about what it is. Some are friendly across party lines, some are not. But I found the people who sort of work in the business to be very – it's more like Yankees and Red Sox who shake hands after the game and go get a couple drinks together.
Boy, that Beckel, he still makes our blood boil.
I know. But he's a character.
He is.
And then there's the other thing I learned, that the last 50 days of these campaigns is just total madness. It's like Animal House on wheels, and they're hitting 3, 4, even 5 cities in a day. So they'll wake up and do a sunrise rally in Tampa, and then they'll drive across Florida to Palm Beach, and they'll hop a flight to New York, and then they'll close the day out in Boston at some other rally. They're just hitting as much as they can, getting to all the key cities. And so it's about 3 Greyhound bus-sized buses full of people between the campaign staff, the Secret Service, the journalists, and then all the techs who travel with the journalists to do all the lighting and the cameras and everything else. And they never touch a bag or talk to TSA. The bus pulls right up on the tarmac. They get on the plane. They go to the hotel. There's no time for anyone to do laundry. On the red-eye flights, there's all sorts of – lots of people are joining the Mile High Club, and there's lots of drinking and very little sleeping. It's just an insane period. It was described to me as staying up all night for an all-nighter for your final exams and working your tail off through the night and then doing that 50 straight days.
Yeah, and these are the people that are supposed to give us the news and the politics. Douglas Brunt with us, The Means, his new bestseller here at 580 KIDO. What about the candidates? Does the packaging, does the consultants, does the isolation from reality turn them into something that they were far differently from what they started out when they, you know, were talking in front of five people at the Five and Dime?
That's one of the questions that the book poses, and I don't offer a judgment so much, if it's more for the reader to judge. But the question is it drawing in a certain type of flawed person who wants this, or does a good person go for it, but the process they have to go through ends up corrupting them? There's so many sacrifices you need to make to get there, and so many compromises that you need to make that by the end of it, you've become flawed. And that's a tough question. It's because clearly our system is not perfect. We're now spending on a presidential campaign $1 billion for a candidacy.
Well, how close to reality does your book hit?
Very close. Bob Beckel called me up after he read it and said, "Who have you been talking to? This is spot on." Carville read it and said, "This is a must read." And Mike Huckabee, Governor Huckabee, gave me a great blurb saying, "This is the kind of stuff that you can't learn in the newspapers or on the TV. This is the behind the very accurate behind the scenes description of what's going on."
Now, do you get a chance to go into debate prep? Because we've kind of made it like the pseudo sporting event. Well, he got a lot of is, and he got the last word in.
Yeah, there is a big debate scene in the book, and I do get into the lead-ins to that with prep and what the team around the candidate is working on and trying to do. And what I found is that the people who are the experts in preparing their candidate really need to get to know their candidate and the kind of lane he feels comfortable operating in. So if this is someone who's really quick and smart and charismatic and kind of funny, they can go for some zingers. But if it's not, they just want to get out there and look credible. And you just sort of have to find the comfort zone in your candidate and prepare him that way. And I think for most people, they don't go out there and try to hit home runs. They just want to get out there and hit a couple singles, look decisive, don't say, you know, on the one hand this, but on the other hand that. You know, you got to go out there and be tough and decisive, particularly if you're the challenger. If you can get out there and hold your ground against an incumbent president, you can really elevate yourself.
Mr. Brunt, two more questions here. Number one, what type of people work behind the scenes, the Carvels, the Stephanopouloses, the Beckels? And number two, how big an advantage is it to have the big money?
The type of what I've found is the people on these campaigns, it's very much of a young man's and young woman's game. And if you are in your mid-30s and you've been around for a few campaigns doing this, you'd be one of the more seasoned senior people there. There's a very high burnout factor. And so the typical staff is a lot of folks in their 20s, which is why it's such a crazy environment, you know, in these hotels and running around on planes and things like that. So there's a real burnout factor. What was the second question?
How big a corrupting influence, if at all, is the money?
The money is worrisome on two fronts. One is how, you know, can influence be bought? And clearly there is some, you know, you can almost track that. You pay a certain amount of dollars and you can watch the polls move and you can almost sort of see what a percentage point on an issue is going to cost you. It doesn't always work that way. I mean, you see some campaigns that outspend another 4-1, and they still lose just because, you know, the other person is very strong and maybe, you know, on the right side of the issues in that time. So it's not 100% that things can be bought, but clearly it's something that can be measured. The second thing that's worrisome, though, is just the distracting nature of it from governing. You know, not to pick on Obama, because I think everyone needs to go raise money, but how many times do you look up in the news and there's something horrific happening while he's on his way to go raise more money? And the reason I say I don't want to pick on him too much, every politician needs to go raise their money. But it's really it's gotten so crazy that it really distracts people from actually doing the job. Keeping the job is so hard. You gotta take your eye off the ball of actually doing the job. And as I said, $1 billion for a campaign is just, you know, we're reaching new heights here.
Well, a final thought to you, part 27 here at 580 KIDO, Mr. Brunner. Are you proud of Coach Cutcliffe, of what he's done, and are you going to go to Cameron anytime soon?
Cutcliffe's doing a great job down there, and I have not been to Cameron in more than 10 years. I need to get back down. I'm in New York, so it's easier when the Blue Devils come play through Madison Square Garden. That's a little easier to get to, but there's nothing like a Cameron basketball game. I need to get Megan down there as well. She's never had that experience, so maybe this will be the year.
That'd be great. Bucky Waters is always such a great resource, and you Duke people, even though I'm a kind of a partial Carolina guy, you guys are all right with me.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, sir. Great luck, continued success.
Thanks very much. Thanks. Good to talk to you this morning.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. There we have it. Douglas Brunt talking about his new bestseller, The Means. And, you know, we'll give you a little insight here. Now, we're rolling around, and I go to Ray Amaya, we're going to take him for 5 minutes because we've got some issues to talk about. We've got the beheading. We've got Obama. And I'm going to say this, and I know what you're thinking. Well, you took him because of who his wife is. No, I did that for Jim and Star and Russ Smurs, two of the biggest Megyn Kelly fans around. But I enjoyed the interview with Mr. Brunt. The idea that these people that are running for office and the people running them for office are flawed individuals. So check out his book, The Means, New York Times bestselling author. Again, just another example of what we're trying to do to give you the best information, opinion, and solution.
Everyone is talking to Kevin Miller.
Douglas Brunt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show. My wife is Megyn Kelly, who is an anchor for Fox News. It's really very nice.
Every morning. Join the conversation with Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO coming up. Emily Witherwood will join us with the latest from the Middle East. Hey, good news out of Afghanistan. The status forces agreement has been signed by the new Afghani president. What's his name? I don't know what his name is, but we'll find out from Emily Wither about 6:40 here at 580 KIDO. And the difference between leaving Afghanistan and leaving Iraq is in Iraq, the president unfortunately could not come to an agreement with Maliki, the leader that we installed. And therefore, we see chaos, we see ISIS, we see ISIL, we see icicles all over that country. And in Afghanistan, that's not going to happen. 10,000 U.S. forces will be there. By the way, between you and me, it's just essentially going to be a bunch of special operators. Remember, and those of you that have been with us from the very beginning or just last week, we've constructed a uber secret. If it's so secret, Kevin, why do you know about it? I don't know. But it's a uber secret joint special operations center where we're going to have the Delta Force, the Navy SEALs, Marine Recon, all those folks there. So if something bad happens, we've got them in that region. I bet you primarily that's who it's going to be, and certainly the support personnel to support that facility. So that's big news out of Afghanistan. Top news nationally has to be this scary stuff going on inside the White House where you have this jumper. And we talked a little bit about this earlier. The jumper who got in, got past a Secret Service agent, I think went up the stairs because I think that's the East Room and the Green Room are upstairs, and was finally tackled. Now, aren't there alarms in the White House? Apparently, they were disabled. Now, whether you like the president or not, folks, we pay people. I'm very objective when it comes to our sports teams. Look, you don't produce, you're done. If you don't protect the president, you're done. This young lady who's the head of the Secret Service, remember the one that was supposed to end all the shenanigans after the prostitutes and everything else? She's got to go. And maybe it's time to put the Secret Service back under the Department of the Treasury Department. If that's what really needs to happen, as Dave Burnett was referring to the Sean Hannity interview last night. If these shenanigans are allowed to continue, what does this say? Here's the skinny here. Imagine if you're watching an episode of 24 and you have somebody with a body bomb vest that gets inside and causes irreparable harm, damage, kills somebody, perhaps taking out the first family. Folks, this is what happens when security is lapsed, right? Now, people are going to say, well, it's the Republicans, this, that, and the other. No, when it comes to protecting the president, we're nonpartisan. And it's just like we talked about with this beheading. We've got to get tough. We'll talk a little bit more about that. By the way, if you get a chance, and I urge you to do this, go to 580kido.com. One of the blogs there from Kevin Miller. No, not the one with Kevin Miller holding a pug. What's that? Which one's the pug? The pug is the tan one. I'm the one in the blue shirt with the goofy smile and the faded goatee. But Oklahoma beheading, workplace violence. You'll see the video that we discussed yesterday. And your chance to comment on whether or not you believe that one major network is actually pushing this beheading as workplace violence. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Plus, Emily Wither exclusively with us live from the Middle East next at 580KIDO.
Brian Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And speaking of the Marconi Award, we invite you to join us October 17th at the Chick-fil-A on Eagle Road in Meridian. We want to thank Brad and Amy for supporting us. We're going to have a party. And, you know, people talk about a party. It's all about you. No, it's all about you. You made the award happen. You allowed us to be here. You support our fine sponsors, our fine supporters like Chick-fil-A on Eagle Road. That will be the 17th of October. We're going to have a party. I wanted to do a five-year, hey, I made 5 years of employment here anyway party. So why don't we all meet during the morning show, make plans to come in late now, October 17th at Chick-fil-A on Eagle Road. Thank you, Brad and Amy. We'll have much more on that coming up. Joining us now, our great friend Emily Wither, live from Jerusalem. Emily, I wish you could make it.
Yes, well, if you want to send a plane ticket, then maybe I will.
Well,
we can have a fundraising, a little fundraising session, see if anyone wants to pitch in.
Yes, we'll have another appearance just to fundraise to get you here. I don't know if we'll have enough money to get you back, but heck, you might like it here.
Oh, dear. What's worse, the clutches of ISIS or the clutches of Idaho? Joking.
Well, before we get to ISIS and their reaction, you were reporting at the top of the hour concerning something that didn't happen in Iraq but has happened in Afghanistan, the signing and the agreement of the Status Forces Agreement.
Yes, finally. So this is the agreement that the former president, Hamid Karzai, had refused to sign, and also a very similar agreement that was never reached with Iraq, which is why all U.S. forces withdrew from Iraq when the war was finished in that country. But it appears that in Afghanistan, it will be a different story. The newly sworn-in leader, Ashraf Ghani, had promised that he would sign the deal with the U.S., and he's stuck good to his word and has inked the deal just the day after he was sworn in. And what it means is that there will now be able to be up to 10,000 American troops remaining in Afghanistan after American combat troops withdraw at the end of the year. And they'll be staying there in a mentoring role to help Afghans' local forces stick to the course and remember what they've learned.
Emily Wither joining us live from Jerusalem at Fox News Radio on 580KIDO. I understand that the current president, at least internationally, has the perception of being more credible than the former president, Hamid Karzai.
Hamid Karzai had a very bad relationship towards the end of his term with the U.S. It was always very rocky, but particularly in its final year, tensions between the U.S. and Afghanistan were incredibly high under Hamid Karzai. And under the new leader, Ashraf Ghani, things have already gotten off to a good start. He's also spoken out about a number of issues which will go down quite well in the West, such as calling to the Taliban to lay down their arms and join the political process. He's also said that women should play a more active role in governmental roles and high positions in Afghanistan. Afghan society. He says that a woman should be appointed to one of the top jobs at the Supreme Court. And all of these sorts of statements already indicate that the relationship between Afghanistan and the U.S. is off to a good start and will be much improved under this new president.
Emily Wither joining us here at 580 KIDO. Let's move on to ISIS and the reaction of ISIS and al-Qaeda to the airstrikes. They vowed vengeance against America. Is this anything new?
It is new in the sense that the U.S., when they started these airstrikes in Syria, had initially said that they were going after ISIS. But actually what's transpired is that they're also attacking an al-Qaeda-affiliated rebel group in Syria called the Nusra Front. Now, the Nusra Front is actually a rival of ISIS. And striking them has actually really angered some of the moderate rebel groups inside Syria who view the Nusra Front as being an ally against ISIS with them. So they've been attacking ISIS. They've been working quite hard to get back at them with help of moderate rebels. And also the Nusra Front fight alongside the moderate rebels to try and attack President Assad's regime. So they're very unhappy, some of the moderate rebels, that the Nusra Front is being targeted. And what these strikes may have done is actually form a coalition now between the Nusra Front and ISIS. We have heard reports that these two rival groups are now holding war planning meetings, and they're thinking of teaming up to fight back against the U.S. So as rebels and activists are warning on the ground, this is only going to inject more chaos into the conflict, and already it's again becoming a much more complicated picture.
You're just full of good news.
I'm afraid it's pretty much all bad news from here. I haven't got anything good for you today.
Well, what about Netanyahu before the United Nations? What's the reaction in Israel to that?
That speech that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave is being viewed here in the local editorials as being a bit of an election speech. So while it may have gone down quite well in Israel, there has been some criticism that it didn't have much impact on the international stage. Many feel that that speech delivered by Netanyahu was very similar to previous speeches that he's given, where he's tried to highlight Iran as being the biggest threat in the region, not other militant groups. This time round it was ISIS. Last time round it was other militant groups that were operating inside the Middle East. And I think many people as well are a little bit skeptical of Netanyahu's statement that ISIS is Hamas and Hamas is ISIS. Even the U.S. State Department were a little bit cautious with that comment. They have tried to distance themselves from it, saying that the U.S. wouldn't be going after ISIS, wouldn't be going after Hamas, even though Netanyahu has made this ISIS-Hamas comparison.
Emily, final thought here at 580KIDO. Has the U.S. bombing in Iraq and Syria helped perhaps bring them back into the fold with the Israeli government?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the beginning of that.
Has the U.S. bombing Syria and Iraq brought them back closer to the Israeli government?
I don't think so necessarily, because the Israelis haven't been involved in this coalition. It would be very difficult for the Israelis to get involved. Firstly, no Arab ally of the U.S. that the U.S. is working with at the moment would want to be flying warplanes alongside Israel. The other danger is that if Israel did get involved in this coalition, that they would be the first to face retaliatory attacks because they are on the border with Syria. So it would be pretty easy to lob a few rockets over in Israel's direction because you were angry at their involvement. So I think the Israelis have been pretty marginalized with this coalition in Syria and Iraq, and I wouldn't say that it's brought the relationship closer at all.
Emily, we appreciate it. We'll start that fundraiser to bring you here for some Chick-fil-A.
I'm not even sure what that is, so yes, it sounds very exciting.
Take care.
Bye.
There you have it, Emily Wither. If you're just tuning in at 580KIDO, October 17th, we'll have Hey, Kevin Miller, State Employed, 5 years at the radio station party, a celebration of you at the Chick-fil-A on Eagle Road right there. You can't miss it. I want to thank Brad and Amy for helping us do this, and we're going to bring out the Marconi Award, and a lot of you have said, what is the Marconi Award? Well, you'll get to see it, and no, it's not like the Stanley Cup where everybody gets to have it for a day, but you want to take your picture with it, we'll put it up on our Facebook site, our website. It is a tribute to all the fine works that you have done here in the Treasure Valley by putting up with yours truly daily from 5 to 9 for 5 years, over 5 years now, when we're talking about our special projects, whether it's the Domestic Violence Forum. Stay tuned, more on that. Whether it's our school program, and we are putting together the Coalition of the Willing, if you will, to once again do Miller's mission as well. And, you know, again, we understand there are a lot of bad things going on, and there are a lot of people that are against things, but we want to make sure that you know that we're here and we're here for you. And that's just not a slogan. We try and live by that. And please hold me accountable if that doesn't happen. 6:48 coming up next. Did you watch the game last night? One player got penalized for praying. Details. Is prayer, faith, family, and football allowed in America? Let's get you to work safely.
And back, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Living the dream with you at 6:53 on 580 KIDO. By the way, here's something, something to be thankful about. I think we should call this segment, Thank God We Live in Idaho. Or thank goodness we live in Idaho. Thankfully, we don't live in Seattle. According to published reports, a 9-0 vote by the Seattle City Council agreed to pass a new ordinance that could fine you for not composting. The new program is an incentive to help Seattle reach the goal of recycling 60% of everything by 2015. Now, I have to say this, that you don't have to really worry about composting or wasting food if you have the physique or the appetite of K. Millie. What do you mean, K. Millie? Well, I'm glad you asked, K. Millie. If you're a member of the Clean Plate Club, you don't really ever have to worry about wasting food. Heck, sometimes you eat food you don't even like. Now, I know those folks with their slender aesthetic physiques. Did you ever notice that they're really not members of the Clean Plate Club unless they're, unless they're an athlete? But most of the people that are in shape, they don't have a problem throwing food out. Well, in Seattle, which thank goodness we don't live there, they could fine you. The new law is expected to generate an additional 38,000 tons of compost material every year. The fine is $1 for each violation at a residence and up to 50 simoleons for a business or an apartment complex. Now, Seattle Public Utilities, because they really don't have anything better to do, are estimating that 30 to 50% of what goes into the trash should be composted or recycled. The fines will start in the mid-year. Now, again, thank goodness that we live here in Idaho. Our friends in Oregon, or as I like to call it, Orgeron, are getting ready to legalize the marijuana. They'll have a big vote coming up. Oh, I wonder what the commercials will be for that. Could you imagine that? Hi there. No, never mind. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that next hour here at 580-KIDO. Phone number's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. But this goes to something that covers entertainment and covers faith. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, the ubiquitous Wendy Garisco. And if you don't know her, you're probably not her friend. But regardless, I was talking to my friend Wendy the other day. And Wendy and I were talking about football. And she goes, you know, it's all about faith football in the South. And I go, yeah, you're right. But last night during the football game, you have Hussein Abdullah of the Kansas City Chiefs scored a touchdown. Well, everybody scored on the touchdown for the Chiefs, 41-14 over my beloved Patriots. Now get this. This is the first time I think this has happened in an NFL game. He followed his Muslim tradition of going to his knees and prostrating toward the Muslim holy land of Mecca. Now, in those NFL stadiums, in Arrowhead Stadium, that's like it replaced Seattle as the loudest, by the way. How in the world you'd figure out which way Mecca is something. And number two, the guy was penalized for it. Now, you think about this. Now people are saying on Twitter, the Muslim guy says Brandon Marshall gets on his knees and raises his hands to Jesus after a TD, no penalty. Hussein Abdullah bows to Mecca and gets 15 yards. Now think about that. Think about that on whether or not you want people praying to Mecca. Now are we going to have the NFL, instead of worrying about games and everything else, they're going to be worried about religion? Gene in CUNA, good morning. You're at 580 KIDO with K. Millie. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Kevin. you know, so often I get tangled up in the topics and the things that are going on in this world, and I don't get a chance to tell you just how much of an inspiration you are to me. You make me, I'm a 58-year-old man here, guy, and I mean, I'm shaped like a pear, but still, it's, you're such an inspiration to me that you make me want to be a better husband to my wife and a better father to my children. And for me to want to build my life to be something other than what I am right now, I really, really want to try to be better because of what I've heard from you and the truth you've told and the awards you have won and the people you have helped. And I'm really striving to be a better human being. But because I listen to you all the time, every morning, rain or shine, I listen to Kevin Miller, and I get real cranky if I don't get to listen to Kevin Miller in the morning. So, my friend, I just wanted to say congratulations on the award. No one deserves it more than you, my friend. And thank you for being there for people like me that want to be a better human being and want to try to strive for something better than what I am. Without you there, Kevin, I didn't realize how lost I really felt until I started listening to you. And my friend, I didn't know you had pugs. I wish I'd have known that.
Well, I don't, but Gene, I love you and you inspire me. I got to run, brother. We'll see you, okay?
All right, man. God bless.
God bless our great friend Gene. Thank you for his great service. Good morning, Dave. Coming up next, Judicial Watch will tell us how Eric Holder got the boot with us, 580 KIDR. Serving Emmett.